Everyone's experience is unique to them. This podcast contains the personal story, experience, and opinions of the speaker, rather than that of Breast Cancer Now. Hello and welcome to the Breast Cancer Now podcast. This is a series that shares the stories of people who have had breast cancer. It's also where you'll hear the voices of our nurses, researchers, and experts who help to provide support for today and hope for the future to anyone affected by breast cancer. Hello, I'm Em, and today I'll be speaking with Nadia and Medina. Nadia was diagnosed with breast cancer last year at the age of 23. She had the support of her family throughout treatment, including that of her sister, Medina. We'll be speaking about how the experience impacted them both. So, Nadia and Medina, thank you for joining me.
Thanks for having us.
So
before we get started with anything else, it would just be really interesting to know a bit of background about you guys, if you wouldn't mind just explaining your relationship as sisters.
Well, we've always had a really close relationship. We always sort of like to share humour. You know, we always sort of share memes, a lot of dark humour, and just jokes the rest of the family just probably wouldn't get. So, yeah, I mean, I've grown up with her and shared a room for most of my life with Medina. So we sort of know each other inside out.
We only have, you know, we actually have a 5-year difference between us. So at first I just thought, oh, that's too much of a gap. I'm not going to, you know, she's not going to get me. I'm not going to get her. But I think just sharing that room with each other, you know, having the highs and lows, you know, fighting as all sisters do, laughing about things, you know, and as Nadia says, sometimes annoyingly close. We know each other way too well sometimes. But yeah, it's extremely close with us, you know, for the last couple of years. I've given her advice. Sometimes she follows it, sometimes she doesn't. And she also gives me advice as well, which is really nice just because she understands, you know, the things I like, the things that annoy me. She's on the top of the list. But no, you know, it's one of those where I can't live with her, can't live without her.
Okay, so it sounds like you guys had a good base of for support already. And as we mentioned in the introduction, Nadia, you were diagnosed with breast cancer last year. And do you mind telling me a little bit about when you first went to the doctor to investigate your symptoms? You were obviously really young at the time. Did you suspect that it might be breast cancer at all?
No, so funnily enough, well, it's not funny, but I'm quite a hypochondriac when it comes to health issues. So normally I would sort of assume the worst about things. But I think with this, I obviously knew cancer was a possibility, but I never actually thought it would be cancer. So I remember specifically the day I sort of found the lump. I think it was just a random day during lockdown. I was just lying on my bed, feeling your breasts as you do sometimes, and I felt this sort of, it was quite a big lump, but it was quite like deep inside there. You had to quite, you know, feel around for it a little bit, and I remember feeling it and just thinking, this doesn't seem quite right, but because I wasn't familiar with like fully how I felt in that area or my breasts, I didn't really self-check or anything like that, so I didn't really know if it was something that I'd just always been there and I'd never felt it, or if it was something new. So yeah, it did worry me a bit, but I never really thought it was cancer. And then I obviously turned to Google, as you would again. And obviously lots of different things came up. I think lumps can be all sorts of things, so there's like cysts or like fibroadenomas or obviously cancer as well, and it was quite hard to tell if it was like this bad cancerous lump or one of the, I guess in quotation marks, the good lumps, because I was obviously trying to match it to what I had, and the descriptions were kind of matching both categories, like it was a hard lump, which is bad, but then it moved around and things like that. So I was quite confused in terms of, you know, what it was really. And I feel like it's not really something that's spoken about amongst young people, especially because, you know, it's just not, young people don't really tend to get it. Whereas other things are obviously more sort of stressed on, like, you know, I don't know, like STDs and things like that. I mean, rightly so. Yeah. But yeah, cancer is just not one of those things that's spoken about really, especially breast cancer. And, you know, even sort of, I think now they're saying like 1 in 2 people are getting it in their lifetime, or I don't know if I'm butchering.
I think that's cancer in general, I think, is yeah. Sort of like a 50-50. Breast cancer, I think it's closer to 1 in 7, but that's still a really high statistic. Yeah.
Yeah, and I think even like seeing those statistics, you just don't, I think as a young person, you just don't ever think it's going to happen to you. And I remember when I was sort of growing up, I'd always see these ads on TV about cancer, like from these different charities. And obviously, I, you know, felt really sad seeing them, but it's just never something you think, oh, this is going to affect me, especially when I'm sort of younger. So sort of bearing that all in mind, overall, I wasn't terribly worried about it. And I think I just sort of pretty much left it for about a week or so, kind of just hoped it would go away by itself. It obviously didn't do that. And then I eventually did go and speak to my GP, and it was over the phone at the time, because it was, I think it was the first lockdown. So I had that phone consultation, and it was just, I remember it being so hard to describe what it felt like over the phone. Yeah, just because it's, they're obviously not there in person to help you. And I think, you know, towards the end of that phone call, the doctor did just sort of say, it's obviously you're a young person, I'm sure it's nothing serious, but if you really want to, for peace of mind, you know, you can come in. And luckily, because I'm quite health conscious most of the time anyway, when it comes to these sort of weird things, I did go in. So I was like, you know what, let me just go in for peace of mind. Even then, you know, after that, they felt it, said it all seemed fine, nothing terrible to worry about. But I think they have to refer you to a breast clinic. So they did, thankfully. That it got rejected once or twice, just because, you know, it was lockdown and they weren't sort of seeing people, they didn't deem risky, things like that. So yeah, eventually I was seen at the breast clinic, and they did those, you know, sort of different things like the physical exams. Again, said it didn't really seem like anything to worry about. They did the ultrasound and then the biopsy, and then I obviously found the news out after that.
God, that must have been so difficult, especially with the added pressure of lockdown and not being able to immediately get to that next step and keep facing those pushbacks. Mm. And I guess during that time you must have had a lot of worry and anxiety. I mean, you describe yourself as someone who already, you know, is quite concerned about their health, which in this situation was actually a really good thing. Did you turn to your sisters in that time about your worries? Were you able to get some comfort from your family?
Yeah, so I think at the time when I found the lump, I kept it to myself for a short while. But then when I realised it wasn't going away, Medina was the first person I actually told. And she's sort of, I think were you the one who encouraged me to?
Yeah, it's because we were in lockdown. I felt like she had the sort of time and opportunity to come to me. We were sort of in each other's faces the whole time, and it was a lot of lockdown sort of happening. So I think it was a case of that. So it kind of helped in a way, like, yeah, I think you should go and see them. It's not like, you know, you have anything else, but, you know, just to make sure. And we actually have had a friend who had a slight scare. And she always thinks the worst of herself. So she said to herself, it's definitely cancer. And we were saying, no. And I think that's immediately the first thing you say, especially when someone brings that up. Even if all the signs are there, you just like, well, no, it can't be, just because it's such a, you know, devastating result when you first get that. And so our friend actually had that scare, I think, was it a couple of months before?
Yeah.
And later found out, and she was actually carrying the test out, and they said, no, it's just cysts, which we were obviously, you know, really happy that was a diagnosis. But she was actually saying, I was like looking on Wigs online, so she's like an extreme, like the worst case scenario that could happen. So I think we kind of had that in our mindset that, well, she never got that, so 100% there's nothing. And I think that's why I told her, I said, even if it isn't, you know, of course it can't be cancer, but like, for example, it's like a cyst, you don't want it to get worse and like to, you know, make it worse. So that wasn't even in the back of our minds. And it's, I think it's such a difficult, it's always a difficult time to have that, but to, like, you know, hospital appointments were so, so hard to get, and, you know, doctor's appointments. And it just kind of goes to show that it's never a good or bad time to have that, but it's just, and as Nadia said, she's one of those people who will follow through. And the whole time we were thinking, imagine those people who, you know, may not have the time, or, you know, may not have the opportunity to, or if they find out the next appointment is months away, oh, you know, I can't, forget it. Or even just like Nadia, just actually pushing through, like, no, can I please get another appointment or get a second opinion? And you don't get that a lot. And that's why it's such a scary thought to have, that you have to keep pursuing that. And I think that's why when she came to me, she did say, she actually said, oh, it's probably nothing, you know, I don't really want to. And I think we were more concerned about sort of wasting doctor's time if it really was anything. But it was, and to this day, we still say, thank God you got it checked out. Because, and we were told that, you know, because I didn't do the research beforehand, I don't think you really do unless it really affects you. But time is so, so critical. And, you know, especially now where it's been what over a year now and things are starting to go back to normal. So just the time part of it that we thought, oh my gosh, why didn't we do this earlier? But thank God we did when we could.
Yeah, and I think it's just, it like worries me as well, just thinking that I obviously went and got it checked out, but I could have easily just sort of thought, oh, it is. And you would, you know, at this age, you would think, oh, it's probably nothing, I'll just let it be, really. If it really bothers me, then I'll get it checked. But it, you know, it didn't bother me, it was just a lump that was there and I wouldn't have known any better. So yeah, it really does open your eyes up.
Yeah, absolutely. I think everything you've mentioned there is so important, especially with some people's inclination to just say like, oh, it's probably nothing, but, you know, maybe I shouldn't waste doctor's time. I think a lot of people think that way, but you absolutely should pursue these things. And obviously it's brilliant that you did and that you were able to have treatment for it and it, you know, it hadn't spread. But that's still huge news to get at the age of 23 that you had breast cancer. And what was your initial reaction to that, both of you? How did you feel about that?
I think shocked is probably an understatement of how I felt. I remember I think they sort of gave a time frame from when I would get the results for the biopsy and things like that, and it was quite a while, I think like a few weeks or something. So it kind of went to the back of my head, and I did get a call, I think the day before I actually went in for the results, just sort of saying, oh, do you mind just coming in tomorrow, you know, there's a face-to-face appointment available. I don't know why at that time alarm bells didn't ring in my head, but I just thought, you know, it's lockdown, they probably short on appointments and they just want to fit me in somewhere. So I thought, oh, it's all fine, to be honest. And I think my dad was sort of saying, oh, I'll take you to the appointment, it's fine. And I remember saying, oh no, it's, you know, it's not going to be anything, I'm fine to sort of go on my own. But he did end up going with me. And yeah, it was just so weird, because the day before I remember I was having the time of my life, just hanging out with my friends, doing all sorts. And then obviously the next day, like when I went in, and I saw the Macmillan nurse was sort of sat on the bed. Again, I don't know why the alarm bells didn't start ringing in my head. I just thought that was the procedure. But yeah, the doctor was quite good at just sort of easing into it a bit. And I think I remember him using the words, it was either malignant or carcinoma, it was one of them. And because I like Googled so much, I knew what those words meant, obviously. And then it clicked in my head and I thought, oh, okay, this is actually something, it's actually cancer. And it was just such a shock. I think, yeah, I remember instantly just crying when he told me that. And in that same conversation, he was just sort of saying like the treatment that was needed. So he was just saying, you know, you're going to need chemotherapy, surgery. I think back then he was saying radiotherapy, but I never ended up doing that. And just all these different things was just in one conversation. And then you're just sort of there trying to take it all in. And I think for me, I think the sort of stereotypical thing is just someone in that moment just closes off and they don't really hear the rest of it. I think for me, it was almost the opposite, where my body just automatically went into survival mode and I was just like, oh my God, like what do I do? I need to get this thing out of me. So yeah, it was a really intense conversation. There was lots of crying. And then I was just given like these bunch of leaflets, obviously with, you know, to do with support and to do with the cancer itself and things like that. And it was not the best journey home, just to sort of mull over that news. And obviously like my eyes were like red when I'd got home, and my mum and Medina were, I think I remember Medina sort of texted me on that day saying, is everything all right? Because it was taking a while. And then she was, well, aside from my dad, she was the first person I also told when, you know, I was actually found out that I had cancer. And it was just, I remember it being so hard to actually get the words out. And that was one of the most difficult things I found, like even after telling my initial family, just telling sort of colleagues and, you know, my partner and things like that, it was just such hard words to get out. So I just literally showed her the leaflets that were in my hand and I just said, yeah, it's obviously cancer. And yeah, that's pretty much how it went. So yeah, it was a massive shock in the end of it.
Yeah, and I think even just hearing, as I said, when she kind of first told me, and then when she took so long on the appointment, and the whole time we were thinking, well, you know, it's COVID, there's going to be long queues, you honestly, in that moment, you find every excuse under the sun to say, you know, there's a reason it takes so long. And that's always sort of a red flag when things are taking so long. And because me and my mum are kind of like sitting ducks, like don't know, you know, what the updates are. We obviously haven't been texted. And then again, I just kept telling my mum it's fine. And she was really, really concerned, and sort of something must be up. And then to reassure her, and I think myself as well, it's kind of like, no, everything's absolutely fine. You just don't want to think about that, even though that's a possibility. And then when she obviously told me, I mean, we have our little jokes, and I just thought when she told me, I can't even say this is a joke, because that's not something she would ever say sort of as a joke. And it just...
Our humour didn't stretch out.
Yeah, it was. It just got to a point where I just thought, and I kept asking her, did they say it wrong? What did they say? Are you sure? And I just kept asking, are you sure? Even though she clearly was sure. I just think you do go into that kind of mode. And I think I could never understand what she was feeling in that point. But even for me, I just thought, you know, your whole world just kind of just is in front of you. And you can't think clearly, and you kind of don't know what to say. And I think it's just a total shock. And as Nadia said, you kind of see these things on TV, but because it never really directly affects you, it doesn't hit as hard as kind of getting that. And I think for her, she could maybe never describe how devastating that was. And sometimes people, you know, focus on that person, which they should, but other times if they have like a larger sort of family or a lot of people who care about them as well, it can just be just as devastating. And I think just hearing that, it's almost like we had no idea what to do. And even though she got like the leaflets and, you know, again, the fantastic support, it's always a case you can have hundreds and hundreds of pages of support, but no one, you know, that emotional side of it, it's so indescribable as to how you kind of feel, because it's almost like you have absolutely no power to do anything other than, you know, do I console them? Do I tell them everything's okay when it probably isn't? And you're in that moment where you're like, I don't want to be selfish, but this is the worst news you could ever hear from, you know, a loved one and someone that close. And we actually, you know, have a close family member, you know, who was also diagnosed with breast cancer. And, you know, we were obviously aware, and unfortunately she's at such a late stage as well. But it's so strange because we thought, you know, we have a family member like that. But, you know, it's really when it hits home is that when it's someone that close to you that you, you know, are with every day. And even now, like, just it kind of brings up so much emotion. And, you know, sometimes it's so difficult to talk about a subject like that, but it's so important to talk about it. And not only the effects it has on the person, but also like the family members, again, the people who care about them. It's so hard to understand what to say and what to do in that moment. But yeah, it's probably, you know, one of the worst news you could ever hear at the time. And I think during COVID times as well, it made it, you know, a million times worse, because it's almost like all this is that's going on, and then you have this added on to it, and you're just, I think people deal with it in different ways, and people sort of, you know, even within our own family, you know, our dad is always a strong, sort of sturdy, supportive type, and to just see him so broken down and so upset about it, kind of like, this is our strongest person and they're feeling that way. And I think even for Nadia as well, she just felt like it's, you know, the whole family feeling a certain type of way as well.
I think it was just like, I felt bad almost telling other people, because they couldn't, like Medina said, they couldn't obviously do much about it, and nothing they would say would necessarily obviously make things better. And, you know, I wasn't expecting that. But I think it was just, yeah, the fear of the unknown. And I think telling people was one of the worst bits. And it was just, I think, that period of waiting to see like what the stage was and how bad it was. Because in that moment, you're literally obviously assuming it could be the worst case scenario, where you're told, you know, you have X amount of time to live or whatever. But thankfully mine, you know, sort of didn't go down that route. But yeah, it was a very scary time, and it was so crazy to think that it was literally just a year ago that all of that happened.
And you mentioned how difficult it was, Medina, that this happening during COVID as well, and you had all these other pressures going on. But I suppose almost an upside of that, I don't know if it was an upside or not actually, but when you had to go through treatment, Nadia, you were at home with your family. I don't know if you would all normally be under the same roof. I don't know if you'd normally spend that much time together, but did you find having that support when you went through treatment, did that help you out a little bit, at least? Because again, you being so young, I imagine there were not other people like you going through treatment at the same time.
Yeah, I think it definitely had its pros. Like we said, you know, there's never a good time to get it or to be told you have sort of cancer. But I think it was for the best, it being during lockdown, just because, like you said, you know, everyone sort of was at home and it was just having that support. And as much as I don't know if it was just my ego that didn't like, you know, allowing myself to do it, but just my family members and my sisters taking me to appointments and just sort of helping me around with certain things. And obviously my appearance changed during that time as well. So it was good to just sort of stay in the house where you have that support and you're around people who, you know, you're really comfortable with, no matter sort of what state you're in. So I think that definitely did work in my favor. And I just had lots of time to spend, especially like with my sister, or both of my sisters, just sort of doing things to take my mind off things and, you know, getting distracted from, I guess, the real world or just work and appointments and things like that. So yeah, it was really nice to have that support.
And Medina, did you feel that you were able to provide that support, or was it almost a bit overwhelming? Again, it's kind of like you're all in the same place. There's not really much space that you could take from one another to kind of deal with it on your own at all, I suppose.
Yeah, and right, exactly what you've said. I mean, we could never know what it would be like, you know, outside of COVID, you know, whether it would still be the same. But for definite, I think that if there is a silver lining, that actually, because we were all kind of working from home and there was opportunities to do that and you couldn't really go anywhere else, it definitely helped in terms of just us being there for her. And I think the hardest part as well was, you know, for her to... you know, she couldn't really take public transport. It's a bit sort of uncertain times, but just sort of taking her there, and we understood sort of after her first treatment sort of how her body was feeling, and it just wasn't up to these, you know, up to how, you know, your normal body is feeling, rightly so, with what's going on and sort of the treatment she has to have. So you know, and in a way it just felt more calming for us in that we knew what she was going through and that we could be there for her for the whole day if we needed to. And you know, as I was working from home as well, you know, work were amazing with sort of, yeah, whenever you need the time to support. And because it was from working from home, I could kind of be there if there was last minute appointments, or you know, if she just needed to you know, have a quick laugh, or for us to just watch something silly. You know, she has quite a close circle of friends as well, and because she couldn't see them all the time, I understood that was obviously, it's hard for anyone really if you can't, you know, see your friends. I know families can sometimes, you know, a bit overwhelming even when you see your friends every single day. It's like, I need a rest from you. So definitely keeping things a lot lighthearted, and I think just providing her just with that support in any sort of any capacity. I knew sort of my dad was where he could, he would be like, no, I could take you to the hospital. My older sister actually, you know, sort of lives with us as well. So, you know, where she could, she would actually sort of stick around, especially for the appointments that were quite far away. Mm-hmm. Luckily, it wasn't too far, but where she had to stay behind. And I think Nigel's always been that type of person where if I can't do it, then, you know, no one's able to do it. I should be the only one to do my own thing. So I think it was a lot harder for her to kind of give that up as well, in that, no, actually, it's fine to have support. It's fine to have someone take you. And, you know, it's not a burden on us to, you know, to be taking you, to be waiting. And I think during COVID times as well, they wouldn't allow people into appointments or to kind of sit there with them. So we were really anxious as to, you know, no one in our immediate family had experienced this. So and you know, their relative is in another country, so they couldn't provide, you know, the support as in terms of what to expect as well. So it was definitely going into the dark with, you know, what kind of thing should this person be experiencing? And I was tried my best to kind of not look at the internet too much, because sometimes it's either an amazing support place, which I think Nadia actually has joined a few groups where they provided a lot of information, which is amazing. But there's also that other side where they're saying a million different things and you're like, is this what's going to happen? And or is that going to happen? And everyone has such a different experience. And, you know, sometimes for the families as well who have someone who's affected by that, it's almost like, what can I say? What do I do after they've come out of treatment? Like, you know, are they okay just to sit there in silence and not have to talk? Or do they want someone talking to them? So it's such a minefield to go through to understand what is needed. And I think in the beginning it was extremely hard, because she hates anyone feeling, as loads of people, they hate anyone feeling sorry for her, or, you know, they don't want to be in that position.
I think it kind of just forced me to allow myself to be supported whilst being at home by family, because like Medina said, I wasn't sort of seeing friends or anything like that. Or I think if I was sort of had more time to myself, I probably wouldn't have reached for help as much from my family, you know, not because I don't like them, it's just because I don't want to burden other people with it. But yeah, I think it was sort of a blessing in disguise having sort of my family around me, just to sort of help out with all the different things.
And I think as well, it's such a strange time where no one can really tell you how it is until it happens. And, you know, no one should ever have to go through that, the person going through that and the family, you know, the family members and what's sort of happening. And I think my mum was sort of the main person who, we called her the water police, because she'd always be after my sister saying, you have to drink water, you haven't been in for three, and she would have these massive bottles and she goes, I counted, you didn't have your second one.
Still
and then
does it.
And then Nadia would be like, can you drink some, because she's going to come back and she's going to say, why haven't I finished this? So she was, and she's the type of person where she would actually get super mad if sort of she wasn't eating properly, and I would always tell her, like, Nadia's not doing this on purpose, she just really doesn't have the energy, or she's not maybe able to eat it. And she goes, no, I don't care if she hates me, she's going to drink this, she's going to eat this. So I think Nadia hated it in the beginning, but understood that it was just as hard for my mum to do that as well. And I think just having that family support, and, you know, I always felt like those who didn't have it, you know, how much of a struggle that must have been for them. And I think we went kind of crazy at one point. Me and my sister were talking about, like, shaving our heads, like, in support of her, just because we didn't know how to feel in a way. And we thought, you know, oh, will she actually be offended by this? Because we kind of tiptoed around. And I think even sort of within our family as well, and culturally, it's such a taboo subject and it never should be. And even my mum was at a point like, oh, I really don't want to tell extended family. And it took her months to tell her own sister, which I thought was absolutely crazy. And it wasn't even that, oh, I don't want her feeling sorry. It's such a taboo thing to be that, you know, ill, and it never should be. And we were trying to explain to my mum that actually the more people are aware of this, the better. Like, you know, our extended family who, you know, told us at such a late stage, and we thought we never knew what was going on with her. And it's never that person's fault to have that. So to have it as such a taboo subject, we always found it really hard. And my mum kind of came round to the idea that, you know, it's not something that should be, you know, hushed about, and no, we don't talk about it. It's something that's happened, it's really unfortunate, but just kind of, you know, explaining to people that it's fine to, you know, cry about it to someone, it's fine to have that support. And I imagine, you know, even within culturally, within our culture, there must be so many people struggling through that, but because of the subject and the taboo that it holds, that maybe they can't say what they need to say, or maybe they can't discuss it because, oh, you know, it's the breast or anything, and, you know, shouldn't talk that around that. And, you know, we're really grateful that you know, our parents are really open to that, but there's still that restraint. And you know, it's so nice to be a part of the wider community where, you know, we have friends that are like, you know what needs to be talked about. And I know Nadia posts a lot on her Insta about, you know, checking yourself.
I annoy people every month. You need to check your breath today.
and it's been really hard because it's such a huge impact on someone's life that you can't really hide that. And I think it's been difficult for our parents as well, because they've always been told not to, you know, tell people about our health and tell people what's going on. And, you know, it's nothing to shy away from and to hide from, but actually it can support and help others who are going through that. And I think we try to sort of tell our parents as well that, you know, our dad is extremely understanding, but for my mum, because, you know, she wasn't sure how she could explain that to her own family about what's going on. So it was baby steps, but I think just from that experience, we just had to kind of embrace it, if that's the right word, that actually this has happened, what can we do? And there were definitely mistakes along the way, sort of maybe we should do this or maybe we should do that. But yeah, I think having a huge support system has been the biggest help.
Yeah, you touched on so many fantastic things there. And thank you so much. I mean, like you say, having that support around you, sometimes it's difficult to accept that support, and we hear that from a lot of people. It is very strange sometimes to be put in a position where you suddenly you're not as able to do the things you might have been able to do before. Yeah. And first of all, accepting that, but then also acknowledging that you are able to accept help as well for that. It's such a strange thing to have to suddenly adapt to. And I'm really glad you touched on kind of cultural taboos and things here as well, because this is something that we've been hearing a lot about recently, actually, just on the yeah. podcast, we've had conversations about this. And it is something where it's like these barriers need to be broken down, but actually taking the steps to do that can be so difficult. And like the onus then is on you, the person who's going through this, to kind of try and break those boundaries. And that's just such a huge burden to take on at the same time. Yeah. And this leads quite nicely into talking a bit more about the Take Control Now campaign that you guys have both been part of, which is between Breast Cancer Now and GHD. And through that, we're sort of encouraging people to check themselves for symptoms of breast cancer, which it sounds like, Nadia, you're already doing independently through Instagram, yeah. which is fantastic. I wonder if you just speak a little bit more about that kind of, you know, what was it for you that made you decide that you wanted to be a part of this? And what sort of messages are you hoping to get out through being part of the campaign?
I think it was just so nice to be part of something just raising awareness of this amongst women, and not just older women, just, you know, women of all ages. I think that's such a great thing to be a part of. And I think if I had something like that, you know, just to look at and to be aware of, I think I would have been much more sort of certain of, okay, I was doing the right thing and getting myself checked. This is what I should be looking out for. And, you know, had I not been randomly touching my chest that one day, I would have known to just do that normally and just check myself, you know, for different symptoms. And I think it's just nice to show that it can literally affect everyone, and just to get that message out there a lot as well. And I think sort of leading on from that, I think it's just so important to raise that. It's firstly raising the message of you should get yourself checked. But I think that also leads really nicely into people wanting to know how exactly to do that. And I think it's important they know that it's not just a lump that people need to look out for. You know, it's all these other sort of things that people need to look for. And, you know, there were certain symptoms I had, which I hadn't noticed. And now I'm sort of connecting the dots and saying, oh, this was also a symptom of me having breast cancer. So, yeah, I think it's just so lovely to be a part of that.
Yeah, and I think I was actually initially surprised just because I haven't, you know, I didn't have that diagnosis, and it was Nadia. But it was really nice for, you know, a huge brand like GHD to actually involve family members, because sometimes, you know, rightly so, with what the person's going through, you know, it's difficult for the family members as well. And I think sometimes selfishly, you know, I think, oh, is someone else going through that as well? But you don't want to take on that too much, because you're thinking, well, the person's going through it, I don't want to be selfish and going, oh, but look what I'm going through. But it's a you know, it's a perfectly valid feeling to have, and I can appreciate others going through. And the stories that we've heard, you know, from other people through the GHD campaign, just kind of what they felt, and I could really relate to a lot of what they were saying and the feelings they had. And it was just nice to be part of something where I can actually relate to someone who's been going through that, because I don't come across sort of, you know, people every day who are having the same experiences as me. And, you know, as a person who's affected, you know, by a loved one having that, you don't want to talk about it because you don't want to take it from the person who's had it, and kind of it has an almost selfish element. But from hearing those stories from the campaign and how, you know, how actually it's not selfish and it was a valid feelings they had, and that they were supporting the person, and through having those feelings they were able to, you know, can partly understand what's going on. And, you know, GHD did, you know, we saw the adverts and it was such an amazing part to it, where they were saying sort of what you need to check, and also it has to be visually pleasing. And I think sometimes, you know, when something is, it's sometimes such a huge subject to go around, and it's like, how do you present that to people who never had to deal with it or haven't been affected by it? And just to have that all the time, and Nadja having that on her sort of Insta posts and everything, where, you know, check yourself, I'm always like, oh yeah, time, because you kind of in everyday stuff you kind of forget that, in a sense. It's not something that comes up unless, you know, you feel something, or, you know, something happens on your body. But just taking the action to do that, and the straighteners we got, actually thanks to them as well, has it in sort of big routing, take control now. So it's just those little words there that something that you use every day, that whether it's the hairdryer or the straightener, and as women we use it all the time, and it's like that's a constant message to have, and it's a great message to have, and it's not about hiding from that or only when it affects you, but just kind of all the time having that in your mind. And it's not a bad thing to have on your mind. And as Nadja rightly said, if she hadn't had the chance or the time to do that, she may have spotted it too late. So yeah, amazing campaign, and we're so appreciative to be part of that as well, and to kind of share our stories as well.
Yeah, fantastic. And we're obviously so appreciative that you've shared those stories of Breast Cancer Now, and we've shared a blog from you, and sharing this story from you as well. Hopefully, just by people are listening and people reading a bit more about it, you're again spreading that awareness. And it is just those little reminders, just to keep it at the front of your mind. Like you say, it says take control now on a product that you're using every single day. So it's just a sort of nudge in the right direction to just be a bit more aware of your health, and you know, just checking it at the right time can make all the difference.
Yeah.
So thank you for telling us a bit more about that. You can support Breast Cancer Now and our Take Control campaign by visiting ghd.com/pink and purchasing something from the Pink collection. You can also familiarise yourself with self-checking by typing in signs and symptoms into the search bar on breastcancernow.org. And to keep up with Nadja Medina, you can find Nadja and her very helpful checking prompts on Instagram at Microsoft Windows 95, which is an excellent handle right there. And you can find Medina at Medusa112, and the E in Medusa is a 3. We'll link both those in the show notes so that you can follow along easily if you want to do that. And I think all that's left to say is Nadja Medina, thank you so much for joining me. You've been excellent, and it's been lovely talking to you.
Thank you so much for having us. It's been so nice to share our story.
Yeah, thank you for having us. It's an amazing conversation to have, and yeah, thanks.
Thank you for listening to the Breast Cancer Now podcast. Make sure to subscribe to our channel on your preferred podcast service to hear our next episode. If you have any questions or concerns from listening today, you can find information on our research, services and campaigning on our website at breastcancernow.org.